Blog Talk Radio.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Welcome, friends, brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ, and seekers of the truth. This is an important message, folks, and I'm getting my own audio in my headset. That's the problem here. Anyways, whoever you are, I know that we have one thing in common. We all want to know the truth about what's really going on here in this crazy year called 2020. So welcome to the 467th edition of SDG titled The Coronavirus Riots, Rules for Radicals and Integrity. Now later in this message, we're going to tie it all into Proverbs chapter 11, verse 3, which reads, "The integrity of the upright shall guide them, but the perverseness of the transgressors, it shall destroy them." And then we're going to build upon what we learned last week concerning God's prohibition on child sacrifice, which is still going on today, folks. And all these other abominations, we call them perversions, that are told to us in Deuteronomy chapter 18, verses 10 through 12. But bottom line, folks, it's something that all believers need to know. And that one thing we need to know is that we need to be grounded in Jesus. So let's all be in for Jesus, okay? Now, enough with that right now. We're going to get into more of that later, but right now, what's going on with this pandemic and all these peaceful riots, mostly peaceful riots, that are popping up all across America? Well, I hope you stay tuned, folks, as we dive deeper and deeper into America's new 9/11 events as they unfold in slow motion while on steroids. But remember, folks, it all started with this lab-engineered, media-manipulated coronavirus heist. So let's get started right now with what we call Sister Kathy's Freaky Deaky News Update. Now, of course, we get started with the coronavirus heist.
It's a scandemic. They call it the great equalizer. And say we're all in this together, except that for the bankers, politicians, and powers to be. And folks, that ain't either you or me. So let's all wake up to the coronavirus heist.
I'm trying this new headset, folks, and a few other things, and I'm having a few technical difficulties.
It's a scandemic.
I can't shut that off.
And say we're all in this together, except that for
so,
the bankers, politicians,
I'll talk
and
over it. But did you know that there's a group of doctors, and this article is in the USA Today, published on Thursday, August 13th. They want to punish people who refuse the coronavirus vaccine. They claim there's no alternative. This is in the USA Today, folks. It's sick. Listen to this quote from Dr. Michael Lederman, Dr. Stuart Younger, and Maxwell Melman. "While the measures that will be necessary to defeat the coronavirus seem draconian, even anti-American to some, we believe that there is no alternative. Simply put, getting vaccinated is going to be our patriotic duty." This is sick, folks. There's no alternative to vaccine-induced herd immunity in a pandemic. Folks, this doesn't even fall into the definition of pandemic. Did you know that? And they claim that the only way that we're going to ever get out of this is with a broad induction of immunity. And this has to happen in the general population. And how? By vaccination. And that's simply not true. These people are liars.
Really?
Yeah, really. Somebody had their mic on out there that's listening online. Folks, there's a testimony, and I'd like to bring it up. I wasn't going to play it. But this is Dr. Tapper giving a testimony before, I'm not sure if it's a state health commission or a county health commission. But just listen to what Dr. Tapper has to say. He's a practicing physician. He's treating these coronavirus cases on a daily basis. And listen to what he has to say.
Dr. Tapper. I'm in private practice in Omaha, Nebraska. I don't wear a mask. I see over 200 patients a week. I come in close proximity with every patient that I come across. Why haven't I contracted the so-called disease? Americans make up 5% of the world population, but yet we take in 65 to 70% of the world's pharmaceutical drugs. We are one of two countries that allows pharmaceutical advertisements on the television. But yet 80% of Americans are suffering with a chronic disease associated with poor lifestyle choices. 700,000 people will die of heart disease this year alone.
Doctor, please bring yourself in order.
600,000 people will die of cancer. 300,000 people will die of obesity this year. When is enough enough? If this is truly about health, then mandate healthy living, exercise, good food choices, chiropractic, outlaw tobacco and cigarettes, processed sugars. I believe it was Thomas Jefferson who stated, if people let the government decide what foods they eat and what medicines they take, their bodies will soon be in a sorry state as those souls who live under tyranny. You see, God made your body self-healing, self-regulating. If you give the body what it needs, it can be healthy. It is like the wilted plant that sits under the sun. An allopathic model to that is to shield the sun, to protect that plant against the sun, cut off its leaves, medicate or vaccinate that plant. But an epigenetic approach, a wellness approach, is to give that plant water, and it can be well. You see, your body is no different. We must eat well, move well, think well, and we can be well. In other words, your level of health is the genetic expression of your lifestyle choices. And I know full well that your body's ability to heal itself, to overcome disease and circumstances like corona, is far greater than anyone has ever permitted you to believe. Benjamin Rush, a signer of the Declaration of Independence, stated, unless we put medical freedom into the Constitution, a time will come when medicine will organize into an undercover dictatorship to restrict the art of healing to one class of men and deny equal privileges to others. That time is now. These masks have absolutely nothing to do with health, but everything to do with complying with a false flag, tyrannical agenda. If we sacrifice our precious freedoms for temporary security, we will lose both. If you can't comprehend that statement, if you are blind to this agenda, then I am sorry. You have the eyesight of an eagle, but the vision of a clam.
Put on a mask if you want to, but don't ask me where is mine, because I don't wear a mask, and since they don't match, just stay 6 feet behind. Wear the mask, symbolize your control. Wear the mask, regurgitate what you're told. Wear the mask, put a piece of cloth on your face. Wear the mask, savior of the whole human race. It's a safety mask, a safety mask.
All I can say is, Dr. Tapper. You know, that Benjamin Rush quote said so much. I'm not sure about that Jefferson quote. I want to look that one up. But I do believe Benjamin Rush did state that. So there's this tyranny coming upon us over this quote-unquote pandemic. I like to call it a plandemic, folks, because it's not even meeting the definition for either a pandemic or just an epidemic, a regionalized outbreak, exception of a few of those hotspots. But we've had that discussion over and over. And what other issues, health issues, could cause these same symptoms? And I'm not saying 5G causes COVID because it doesn't, but it has analogous symptoms, as does zinc deficiencies, D3 deficiencies, and many other things, like Dr. Tapper said, we find in the American public. But listen to this one out of TV New Zealand. So it's TVNZ. They've become, along with Australia, the beta testing ground for all these things draconian and authoritarian and associated with this scamdemic. And I think this is part of the playbook, folks. So their Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, has made it mandatory for businesses to display this scan tracer. So what you do is you come in with your smartphone, you scan the little scanner code, and if you have that app on your phone, it'll trace you and then alert you if anybody in that location you're at had the quote-unquote Silent Enemy. This is nuts. 100,000 people downloaded the app right after she announced it, or willingly walking into bondage. That's a tracking mechanism, folks. And then did you hear about Del Bigtree, Highwire, and his children's health defense? They deplatformed him out on YouTube because Del has been a big advocate for alternative medicine and his truth concerning vaccines. I guess what did him in was the debate he did with Kennedy and Alan Dershowitz. Actually, he published that debate, and he's gone. He's gone. Deplatformed. Hey, this one's really big. And this was reported by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And he was talking about this deplatforming of Del Bigtree. And what he says is, did you know, believe it or not, that Google is actually a vaccine company? Over the years, it's morphed into a vaccine company, folks. Its parent company, Alphabet, actually manufactures and sells vaccines through some of its subsidiaries. Just Google. Google, listen to me. Do a web search and use another engine other than Google. Use DuckDuckGo or one of the other ones. Just search for Calico and Verily. And you're going to see that these are subsidiaries of Google's parent company. In fact, it's so big that Gentech CEO Arthur Levinson, he now heads up Calico. And it's being touted as an anti-aging company. And then Verily teams up with Big Pharma, and what they do is they conduct clinical trials on drugs and vaccines, but it gets worse. Alphabet actually did a $715 million deal with GlaxoSmithKline. Come on, everybody's heard of Glaxo, to create another drug company called Galvani. So that's number three for Google. But it continues. So in addition to developing bioelectronic medicine and vaccines, and these are tracers, RFID tags, you know, smart tattoos. They're going to get into mining medical information of all their Google customers. And get this, the Google Customer Services President, her name is Mary Ellen Coe. She sits on Merck's board of directors, and who hasn't heard of Merck? Folks, you can't make this stuff up. Can you say conflict of interest? That's why Google's YouTube, you know, Google bought YouTube, took down Del Bigtree. Plus, way back, let's go back to 2016, Google partnered with another drug company called Sofi, and they launched Onduo. And this is a virtual diabetes clinic. So you can use their app, and I think they have the scanner now, and I think it's on cable TV ads. You can actually buy the scanner, and you can identify, or you can measure your blood glucose level. And that's another Google venture. And then in 2018, another business that uses analytics, all these AI analytics, to develop new drugs and vaccines. And then that same year, $27 million invested by Google for Vaxitech. Why? To make vaccines for flus, MERS, prostate cancer, and now they're working on the COVID-19 vaccine. Folks, this is all there. It's facts. Think about all this. Google claims to provide politically neutral research in terms of search engines and all that. Yet it's systematically, through its AI, manipulating search results. Why? To suppress anything contrary to the narrative out there right now by everybody in Big Pharma. So they steer users towards deceptive and fraudulent Big Pharma propaganda and away from anything that's giving alternative treatments, that's allowing the public to realize this isn't as bad as they're being told it is. And folks, it really isn't. You know, this nation has over 300 million people. 8,000 people a day die in this country pre-COVID, give or take. It's seasonal. Yet I'm hearing all kinds of craziness now, and then the narrative has shifted. Have you noticed that? It's no longer we have to flatten the curve. It's they're counting cases. You know, the death rate is down to 0.2% of all cases. That's like a bad flu year, folks. But hold on, it gets worse. Facebook and Google, they both hired fact checker PolitiFact. It's to censor vaccine information. And this company, PolitiFact, you're never going to believe this. It was launched by a grant from none other than the Gates Foundation, Bill and Melinda Gates. This is incestuous, folks. And that's why, and it's time to move on to what I call kabuki theater, because this stuff is all there to confuse and entertain. So, kabuki theater.
COVID-19, George Floyd, Rice, BLM, police reform, the 2020 elections. All merely coincidence? I hardly think so. Folks, it's called kabuki theater. In Japanese, ka means salt, boo means dance. Ki means skill from the verb, kabu meaning to slant or display. Folks, it's all a lie. It's the flattened curve. The curve of the economy, stupid, must slow down the velocity of money. Or will hyperinflate before it would have done. Stealing it all, Trump, bad, must go. Good is bad, bad is good. Up is down, light is dark. It's all kabuki theater, folks. Prepping the masses for agenda 2030 and the new world war. Just say no to it all and wake up before it's too late.
And that's the key, folks. We have to wake up. If the silent majority would wake up, this would go away very fast. Listen to this one. IntelliHub. Fields of human cages discovered outside Carthers, California. Now, this was released by Shepard. I just forgot Shep's last name. He's the guy that broke the news years ago about the mass burials. And those patented, they're incinerator-ready mass burial boxes for people. And I remember when I was on Tribulation Now, my dad went home to be with Jesus, and I was the one making all the arrangements. I went to the cemetery, a large one in my area, and they had rows and rows and rows of these things stacked up at the very far corner of the cemetery. We actually had pictures on the show notes for a while. So in this clip I'd like to play, there's row after row after row of these human cells, these holding cells out in the desert, all stacked, ready to go. They're outfitted for mounting on the back of trucks, like those trucks that carry containers. They're human holding tanks. And how do we know? Because there's toilets in them. You can see them in this video. Now, just a little profanity alert. There's a couple foul words in this, but I think it's very important to listen to this, because I watched the video that comes along with this, and you can see them there. There's quite a few, folks. Listen to this.
Look down here in the bottom.
It does.
Yes, sir, it does.
They have fucking toilets or toilets in them. Holy shit, dude. Those are for people.
Yeah, those are for people.
They've got toilets.
How many are there, bro?
I don't know.
Wow. I can't believe that. But it's real. It's there. So they're planning for something, folks. They're going to detain people. They have cages. What they're for, I'm not sure, but they're there, just like those mass burial units were at the cemetery where my dad was put to rest. How about this one? Did you hear about Millennial Millie, as she's called? She's that young alt media star. She does some contributions on InfoWars, but she's become independent. Well, she was arrested. Now, the American Thinker's doing a really good job covering all this and weaving in all the facts. So last Friday, they came out with the breaking news that she was, in fact, arrested. And isn't it interesting how they arrest her on a Friday, yet she can't have a hearing before the magistrate until Monday. So she has to sit in jail all weekend for a warrant that was issued weeks, if not months, before. Now, what's this all about? Well, before we get into what Peter Barry Chokwa reported over at AmericanThinker.com, I'd like you to hear the arrest. This is the actual arrest. Millie had her cell phone on.
Break.
You're saying a grand jury indicted me?
Uh-huh.
For what?
We're going to have 221s out here. We have room to transport one. Can you send us a car, please? 9107 Yale Road. Okay. I will give you all your paperwork when we get to the jail right now. I need you to get some shoes.
Okay.
Because we need to get moving.
Okay.
I need to get this thing care of.
Well, this time you're not getting ever back.
Okay. Guys, I don't know what's happening right now. The police have just showed up at my house, and they said that they're arresting me. They said that a grand jury indicted me for something. I have no idea what. This is crazy. Where's my shoe? I have one shoe here. Okay.
And one shoe there.
Okay.
So we're good.
So why wasn't I given anything in the mail? Like, I have no idea what this is talking about.
Yeah, really.
Guys, I'm literally about to break huge breaking news right now, and I'm being arrested, and I have no idea why.
You know anything about this case?
Burglary?
Yeah.
For what?
They can't say. They won't say.
They're not even saying. They're saying we're being charged with burglary?
Now, is this from the grand jury or these green sheets?
Grand jury?
Are these green sheets or are they is this an indictment?
Yeah, can you beat me, guys?
Okay, very good. Okay.
This is my son right now.
All right.
Buddy.
Come on, let's go. To the car. I've been more than nice. To the car.
I don't understand what's happening right now. Like, please share this.
So here's what's happening, folks. If you want to read all the details, go over to AmericanThinker.com and just look for the articles on Millie Weaver. If you can't find them, email me at kdbeer1961.com, and I'll send you links to them. Here's the short of it. About 3, maybe 4 months ago, at the beginning of this whole gamdemic and the lockdown, Millie was with her mother, and I think Millie's mom, who's from California, was over here in the Ohio area. And Millie's only about an hour and a half away from where I live. So this is eastern Ohio, right near where I live in western PA. But anyways, they had a little argument over something concerning her mother's cell phone. So Millie took it, a $50 cell phone, and her mother filed a complaint. And then later told the authorities, we worked it all out, don't do anything. But they convened a grand jury, folks, over a little domestic squabble concerning a cell phone. And then they sat on it. Now, what's really strange is this past Monday, Millie was supposed to release her indie doc. It's a 82-minute documentary titled Shadowgate. And there she gets into, I'm just going to read a quote from her 2-minute trailer that she linked to her Twitter account on August 11th, right before all this happened. The Obamagate scandal only scratches the surface. But parties are equally guilty in what should turn out to be an even bigger scandal. Shadowgate, the tactical and operational role of the shadow government played behind the scenes, carrying out a coup against President Trump. Now, what she gets into are two intelligence contractors for the U.S. intelligence agencies, a woman and a man, and they're whistleblowers, quote unquote, and they talk about how AI is used to mold public opinion. This is just a continuation of Mockingbird, the program developed back in the 50s by Alan Dulles, who said that when this program is deemed successful, we will have people so confused they don't know what the truth is. And that was the ultimate outcome. And this program was never dissolved, never terminated. So I think this is a logical continuation. Now, there's nothing new here. Sister and Kathy and I talked about it. In fact, I really do think it's more kabuki theater. And the reason I say all of that is behind politics, so much more. And I'm going to get into that a little bit later. And that's why I call this all kabuki theater. But I'd like to cover a few more kabuki theater items before I explain to you what I meant by that comment concerning politics. How about Epstein's cohort, Maxwell, Ms. Maxwell? She's charged with luring girls into sex abuse. She's kind of the handler for Epstein. So while she's arrested and we're talking about all this, what happens? Epstein's private banker, he was an executive at both Citi and Deutsche Banks, was found swinging from a rope, suicided. This was out in humansarefree.com on August 15th. So Jeffrey Epstein's private banker suicided himself just as the FBI was seeking to interview him about loans he approved to Epstein. You know, Epstein was indicted for being a child trafficker, and he had dope on so many people, politicians, movers and shakers, executives, entertainment moguls. Epstein was the linchpin in this entire abuse of children that I talked about last week. You know, the Los Angeles County Medical Examiner confirmed that Thomas Bowers died by what they called apparent suicide while hanging from a rope at his home. Isn't this coincidental, folks? Isn't this how it always is? You know, the bankers are suicidal. Remember that one that had the nail gun put to the back of his head and then multiple nails? That's the mistake. I think the first one would knock you on your butt if you really tried to do that. I don't think there'd be multiples. Anyways, that was deemed a suicide, just as Mr. Bowers is. Now, he's a banker at both Citibank and Deutsche Bank for Epstein. And the whole game there was that Epstein would default on these loans, yet that didn't really matter to either of the banks. Because what Epstein would do, for every dollar he defaulted upon, he'd bring in 10, 100, maybe even more multiples than that of other people's money. Isn't that brilliant? So the FBI wanted to get into these accounts, and they wanted to interview the banker. Strange, isn't it? But the accounts have all been closed, and the data vaporized. Interesting, isn't it? If you'd like to know more on this, and there's a lot in this article, go out to humansarefree.com and look for the article on the banker. If you can't find it again, email me at kdbeer1961@gmail.com. And I'll be glad to send it out to you. Hey, Michael Schneider had a really good one. And WND.com picked it up. And he's talking about the Democrats' plans after the November 4th election. Now, you know there's going to be riots either way. That's what everybody's talking about. Is this sick or what? But that's what everybody's talking about. Trump win, riots. Trump loses, riots. I talked a week or so ago about the contingency planning. It's like they had Event 201 prior to the pandemic. Just like they had the asteroid impact drill. NASA and who else modeled that a few years back. And they're still planning for that, folks. They're actually planning for a asteroid impact somewhere off the coast of California. Think about what that could cause. You can make one of those up so easily with the detonation of a large bomb underwater or a tactical nuke underwater. The average American wouldn't know whether that was an asteroid or a false flag. But anyways, that's being planned for September. So anyways, Michael Snyder is talking in this article that they're planning riots. Controlled opposition, folks. Order out of chaos. Thesis, antithesis, synthesis. This is their motto. A motto, folks. This is their mode of operation. Now, this is a long article from Michael Schneider, and I'm not going to go through it all. But really, it's just right out of the playbook from Saul Alinsky, Rules for Radicals. And I'll get into that a little bit more in Back to the Future. Hey, how about this one? Another Kabuki madness moment. Disney makes history, introducing its first bisexual cartoon. Oh, my. This stuff, you can't make this up. So anyways, they have this series called Owl House. And one of their main characters, this 14-year-old named Luz Noseda, she's just a normal teenager, but she goes into another dimension, another world. And what's she become? A witch. And now she's being attracted to a female character named Amity, and she wants to invite her to the prom. Now, the creator, Dana Terrace, she confirms that she's alluding to what she calls the LGBTQ alphabet soup relationship agenda. She wrote on her Twitter account, "In development, I was very open about my intention to put queer kids in the main cast. I'm a horrible liar, so sneaking in wouldn't have been very hard." And then she said, "We were given the green light, and I was told that Disney leadership accepted it, but at first they wouldn't." Folks, these are the end times. There's no doubt about it. I mean, this stuff is crazy. Could you imagine this even 10 years ago? Now, I could go on and on about this, but right now it's time for our newest segment called Ken's Corner, spelled with a K. Welcome to Ken's Corner, spelled with a K, where I'll share my life experiences to help you understand what's going on in this crazy, crazy world. So let's get started. Okay, so what we do in this segment is we take some things from the past, conspiracy theories, reports, books, documents, and we link it to current events. Now, Sister Kathy and I, we were emailing back and forth this week, and, you know, it's very discouraging at times when we see all these facts, and yet the people don't get it. Yeah, these are facts, like what I shared to you about the movement that Alphabet, the parent company to Google, is making with regard to investments in big pharma. And it's sad because most of America, the silent majority, Christendom included, they're asleep at the wheel. They're clueless. They're not aware about what's going on in this world all around them. And we're on the precipice, folks, if we haven't already, losing all the liberties that so many people fought and sacrificed so much for so that we could have. They're being swept away like a tsunami sweeps away everything along the shore, people included. And it reminded me how Jesus looked at people. You know, all of his analogies, in fact, it's all the way back into the Old Testament. King David's 23rd Psalm. People are like sheep. Selfish, stubborn, and stupid. Now, I'm sorry if that offends you, but I hope after my little musing here, you see why I said that. It also reminds me of what the editor for the Idaho Times, a guy by the name of Don Harkins, wrote nearly 20 years ago in an op-ed piece. I don't know if you've heard of it before, but it's Slavery and the Eight Veils. And I want to read a little quote. I actually did an entire show on it years ago. It's in the archives. If you're interested in listening to it, it has that in the title, The Eight Veils. So just search under my show banner and see if you can find it. If you can't, you're interested in listening to it again, email me at kdb1961, and I'll be glad to send a link to it for you. But anyways, in this quote, listen to what Don Harkins says. This is at the beginning of his op-ed piece. Extremely evil men and women who make up the world's power elite have cleverly cultivated a virtual pasture so green that very few people seldom, if ever, bother to look up from where they are grazing long enough to notice the brightly colored tags stapled to their ears. And folks, if you live in the country or you've ever driven through and looked at some of the livestock, most of the sheep and the cattle, they have tags in their ears with numbers on. That's how farmers identify them for their health, for their growth. A lot of times farmers buy different bloodlines and they see which ones produce more. And so they're identifiers. And then he continues and said, the same people who cannot see their enslavement for the pasture grass have a tendency to view as insane, quote unquote, conspiracy theorists. Those of us who can see past the farm and into the parlor of his feudal lordship's castle. It's kind of like what the Matrix was about, folks. That's another way to try to portray this, but more on that later. Okay, when we get into the Back to the Future segment, and you'll see what I'm talking about. But before we move on, I just want to share some thoughts with you, folks. You know, I'm in my late 50s now, and I've lived a major portion of my life already. Provided the Lord tarries, I'd like to live through this, compare testimony to Jesus. But whatever happens, okay, I've lived a good bit of my life already. Okay, and I've seen things happen in what's referred to as the Fabian socialist mode of change. Okay, and that's very slow, almost imperceptible, like an oak tree grows. Okay, and it's a change that's very gradual, imperceptible, yet it continues to march on. And that's Fabian socialism, progressive gradualism. It's the way it's been happening since way back in the 1800s. People didn't even know that, but these people have been around, men who crept in unawares, as St. Jude said, generations ago. But then it all changed in September 11th, 2001. It all changed. The velvet gloves came off, so to speak. The iron fist of totalitarianism was out there in the open. At least I thought it was. That's until 2020. And I got to admit, I was even shocked, folks. Yet the people are still asleep. Right now, folks, this progressive gradualism, the Fabian socialism that's been around for so long, it's been tossed aside, and radical revolution is right on our doorstep now. Mayor Peduto, one of their own, was getting eaten by these protesters last week because police had to do an arrest. They had to. And the people are protesting that this violent protester, you know, we don't have the right to violent protest. We have the right to peacefully assemble, to petition Congress for redress of grievances. So the moment you cross the line from peaceful to violent, you have no more rights. So the police were doing what the police had to do, yet these radical Bolsheviks turned on one of their own, and that's what they do. Gradualism has been tossed aside for radical revolution, just like the Bolsheviks did back when the Tsar came down in Russia. And there's a really good series on Netflix called The Last Tsar. If you haven't watched it, watch it. It's what happened. And it's happening here today, folks, as the silent majority sleeps. And then it dawned on me. That's exactly how it's always been. Tyrants have always used these methods. You know, Pharaoh did. Rome's Nero did. Napoleon, Hitler, Stalin, all of these thugs. That's how they gain power. And that's why I said people are like sheep, just like Jesus said. They are stupid, selfish, and stubborn. So I hope now you understand, because
that's my 2 cents.
It is. It's my 2 cents. But now, folks, it's time for the segment where I try to tie all this stuff I've been talking about together and tie it to the future in our segment called Back to the Future, and let's apply these freaky deaky news headlines to something from the past. And what I'd like to focus on today is Saul Alinsky, yes, the radical who wrote Rules for Radicals. And I'm going to tie it to some of today's contemporary politicians, and then some news breaking from both Portland and Chicago. You know, these are tactics, and this is a quote, okay, from page 126 of Saul Alinsky's books published back in, I think it was 1970 or 1969, Rules for Radicals. Tactics are those conscious, deliberate acts by which human beings live with each other and deal with the world around them. Here, our concern is for the tactic of taking, how the have-nots can take power away from the haves. And then he goes on page 127 through 134, talking about how to remember the first rule, power tactics. Now, what I'd like to do here, folks, and this is a really good book to read, and Terry always says, Ken, you got so many crazy books on your shelf. If we're in an accident and somebody has to come in here and clean out this house, they're going to see all your radical books and think you are a nut. You have to know your enemy, folks. That's why I have those books on my shelf. Rule number one, power is not only what you have, but what the enemy thinks you have. And isn't that what they're doing? Make yourself look big when you're small. Number two, never go outside the expertise of your... When an action or a tactic is outside the experience of the people, the result is confusion. Fear and retreat, and the collapse of communication. Number three, Saul talks about whenever possible, go outside the expertise of the enemy. Look for ways to increase insecurity, anxiety, and uncertainty. This happens all the time. Watch how many organizations are under attack. You see it right now? Our police force. They're the thin blue line between order and chaos, folks. Yeah, there's corruption. For the most part, 99.5% of those officers are good. I know a lot of them. I went to school with some of them. They're sons and daughters of my coworkers. They're good people, folks. They want to do a good job. Listen to this one, number four. Make the enemy live up to its own book of rules. You can never kill them. You can kill them with this, for they can no more obey their own rules than the Christian church can live up to Christianity. Of course, it's an ideal, it's a standard, but make that standard an absolute. And then look what happens, folks. Rule number five, ridicule is a man's most potent weapon. And that's what they're doing to President Trump. Like him or not, folks, he does deserve a break. He has been doing some things that have helped the country. And I controlled opposition. I think he's an English Freemason. I would like to take in a future segment Scarlet and the Beast and explain to you the difference between the French and the English Freemasons. Did you see what the Democrats did in when they recited the Pledge of Allegiance, they took God out. That's classic French Freemasonry. Take God out of the equation. The English keep God in, but it's not Jehovah Elohim. It's not the Trinity. It's the great architect, none other than Lucifer. So they both, at the end, serve the same enemy. But let me back on. Rule number six, a good tactic is one your people enjoy. Number seven, a tactic that drags on too long becomes a drag. Man can sustain militant interest in any issue for only a limited time. Item number six, a good is one your people enjoy. Who doesn't enjoy stealing things if you're going to get all these flat screen TVs and Gucci handbags for free? See why they promote looting? Keep the pressure on. This is rule number six. The different tactics and actions and events of the period of your purpose are so essential. You want to pull them all together. That's key. It's really key to make sure that you integrate all these elements. Number 11, the price of a successful attack is a constructive alternative. So you can destroy, and they call that constructive. Isn't that everything that's happening right now? And then the media is complicit in all this. Sickening. Number 12, and this is the last one, and I want to move on with a few more thoughts. Target, freeze it, personalize it, and polarize it. In conflict, tactics that are certain roles that are to be regarded as universalities. That's why they're saying violence is okay. That's why you see these talking heads on CNN and some of the other media outlets saying, well, they have the right to do this. No, they don't, folks. They don't have the right. He continues in rule number 12. One is that the opposition must be singled out as the target and frozen. Right now they're doing it with our men in blue, men and women in blue. But there are also other things. They're going after people that have nice homes now. They're going after people that have worked hard. You know, everything that Terry and I have, we worked for. Everything. Very hard. Made tremendous sacrifices. Drove broken down old cars for years. And today we still buy used cars, folks. But we paid for everything because we worked hard. And we didn't live beyond our means. And now we're being judged for that? People like us? That's all these methods, these 12 rules. And who did Alinsky dedicate them to? None other than Lucifer, who he calls the original radical. Not some man named Lucifer, the fallen angel Lucifer, Satan, the devil, the evil one. And then, like I mentioned when I opened in this segment, there are prominent politicians who have idolized Alinsky, and they include Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. In fact, back when she was 23 years old, fresh out of law school, living in Berkeley, California, she wrote to Saul Alinsky. And she told him, I survived law school, slightly bruised with my belief in and zest for organizing intact. So Hillary Clinton was an organizer. Did you know that? And then she wrote in this letter that's out there, and you can read it. The more I've seen of places like Yale Law School and the people who haunt them, the more convinced I am that we have the serious business and joy of much work ahead, if the commitment to a free and open society is ever going to mean more than eloquence and frustration. Now, I'm not sure what all of that means, Hillary, but it sounds like your free and open society is nothing but chaos. You know, she actually met Alinsky when she was at Wesley College back in 1969 working on her thesis. And I don't know if you know about her controversial theories on community organizing, but they're just as bad as Barack Obama's. Most people don't talk about that, though. And what she was using in her thesis was Alinsky's 1946 handbook, which was the precursor to Rules for Radicals. It was called Reveal for Radicals. Now, in this book, Alinsky encouraged community organizers to fan the latent hostilities. And isn't that what we see going on today? Isn't that what's happening in what started in the riots for George Floyd? In fact, that's what Millie Weaver was alluding to in her Shadowlands documentary. And I guess that's why YouTube took it down as hate speech. But the whistleblowers were contending that the AI was able to signal all these quote-unquote Obama smartphones out there. Remember Obama started that program? And then you can fan these flames of dissent. So all these things tie back, folks, back to the future, you know? This book, Rules for Radicals, was published 1 year before Alinsky's death. And the theme is to pick the target, freeze it, personalize it, and polarize it. Remember? Remember, that's one of his 12 points. So Hillary wrote in this letter, "Dear Saul, when is the new Rules for Radicals coming out?" This is Hillary Clinton. Or has it come out and I somehow missed the fulfillment of Revelation? I have had just 1,000th conversation about Reveal and need more new material to throw at the people. Some strange writing, Hillary, but I think we all get the point. She put Alinsky up on a pedestal. And then when this came out during her 2016 campaign, the people that brought it out were labeled crazy for alluding to the fact that she supports Lucifer. Then she thanks Alinsky for all the advice he's given her about campus organizing and organizing in general. And she said, "If I never thanked you for the encouraging words of last spring in the midst of the Yale Cambodia madness," this is when all the Vietnam protests were going on, "I do so now." And then what about Obama? Of course, he was only 10 years old when Alinsky died. In fact, did I ever tell you that I bumped into him? Obama's almost a month older than me. I was down at the Rivers Club in 2007 while he was out in the campaign stump fundraising. And I was late for a dinner, or it was a lunch meeting. And I was, and if you're not there, the rule was they'd slam the door and you're out, go to the meeting. So I had trouble finding parking. Long story short, I'm running down the hall. My event coordinator's waving me in. And Barack Obama's walking across the hall to go to a banquet for his fundraiser. The moment I'm running down the hall and I smash right into him. Two Secret Service men had me on the ground so fast. Barack Obama had these big eyes, scared to death. He's a very slight man, very small. I thought he was a lot bigger. He's tall but very thin. I knocked him over. The guy caught him. This is real, folks. This really happened. I never saw such fear in his face. Just a little anecdote. Nothing to do with what I'm talking about. But yes, Barack Obama actually taught Saul Alinsky's methods as a community organizer. So he's associated with Alinsky through these terrorists, convicted terrorists, William Ayers and Bernadine Dorm. And this is all out there, folks. I'm just kind of giving you some background on this. But what you may not know is back on August 31st, 2008, this was in a letter to the editor at the Boston Globe that was actually published. Saul Alinsky's son, David, gushed on how Obama's speech convention just had everything that his dad taught in it. Okay, so this was at the Democratic National Convention where Obama was nominated for their choice, their pick. Okay, and this article came out after Obama was elected. Listen to, I'd like to read this to you. And let me check my time here. Yeah, we're doing okay on time. All the elements were present. He's referring to Obama's speech. The individual stories told by real people of their situations and hardships are packed to the rafters crowd. The crowds chanting key phrases and names. The action on the spot, texting, phoning to show instant support and commitment to jump into the Democratic battle. The rallying selections of music, all the things there were all from his dad. He's saying this in this letter in the Boston Globe. Settings of the agenda by the power people, the Democratic National Convention had all the elements of the perfectly organized event, Saul Alinsky style. He's lauding this, you know? It's sick. We just let this all happen. And then he finishes this letter. I'm not going to read the whole thing. It goes on and on. "I'm proud to see that my father's model for organizing is being applied successfully beyond local community organizing to affect the Democratic campaign in 2008. And this is a fine tribute to Saul Alinsky as we approach his 100th birthday." Can you believe this stuff, folks? So how does this apply to what's going on today? Well, I don't know if you know it, but Fox News a few days ago did an update talking about fires set to Portland's Multnomah Building. And this is where the county seat is. This is where all of the county records, you know, marriage certificates, birth and death records, titles for property, and all of the liberal agenda that's so prevalent out there is administered. So again, it's another example of these folks eating their own. Listen to this report. Talk a little bit about it. This is Fox News updating on these mostly peaceful protests out in Portland. It's been going on now for probably pushing 90 consecutive nights.
Watch out behind you!
Body cam video capturing an explosive encounter overnight between Seattle police and protesters outside the city's West Precinct. Officers say it started when they confronted a protester using an umbrella to block the view of a security camera. Some in the crowd responded by throwing bottles and fireworks. At least 12 officers were injured. Meanwhile, Portland police are now looking for suspects in a brutal attack. I want to warn you, this is graphic. And police say the victim was beaten unconscious after his truck crashed near a protest on Sunday. Dan Springer, he's live in Seattle for us. Dan.
Yeah, Dan, it's some breaking news. Police just identified the suspect in this assault. They don't have him yet, but they put out a picture of him. He is 25-year-old Marquise Love, a former security guard who is a regular at Portland's Black Lives Matter protest. We also know the victim. He is 40-year-old Adam Hayner, and he is the one on the right. His brother set up a GoFundMe page last night, which has already raised over $32,000. Good news, Hayner is home and recovering. The attack happened Sunday night in downtown Portland. Adam Hayner had apparently tried to help another person who was robbed by rioters. The crowd turned on him. He drove off, but was chased and he crashed his truck. He was beaten and knocked unconscious with a kick to the head. Multiple people had cameras, but there were no police on hand. Portland police explained their slow response, writing yesterday, quote, "Police are staying away from protesters in order to not be a flashpoint." The beating has gotten a lot of attention across the country, with Senator Ted Cruz blaming Democrats for, quote, anarchy in the streets, and the Trump administration criticizing Portland's elected officials.
This is clearly what happens when we have individuals that defend, deny, and at times actually encourage this type of violence. When we have policies and a lack of leadership that absolutely promotes lawlessness.
Again last night, rioters were on the streets for the 82nd straight night, attacking a police union office, trying to flood it with a hose. But again, the big news today, police have identified their suspect and have asked him to turn himself in. Dana?
All right, Dan Springer, thank you.
So get this. Adam Hayner is a volunteer fireman, and the police officers didn't want to go in because they didn't want to become a flashpoint. They're there to protect and defend folks. So during these riots, here's another clip I'd like to play. And just listen to the chant. And again, a profanity warning, but it's important that you hear this. It's only 19 seconds long, but listen to what they're chanting. So what's going on there is they're telling people, when they're asked what did they see, they're supposed to say, "I didn't see SHT, you know? Where's the virtue in that, folks? That's just another form of perversion. There's no integrity there. And then how about what's going on in Chicago? Here's a speaker at a BLM protest. This is a BLM official, quote unquote, speaking to a group of people prior to their mostly peaceful protest. Listen to this.
Care if somebody decides to loot a Gucci or a Macy's or a Nike, because that makes sure that that person eats. That makes sure that that person has clothes. That's reparation. That is reparation. Anything they want to take, take it, because these businesses have insurance. They're going to get their money back. My people aren't getting anything. Care if somebody decides to loot a Gucci or a Macy's or a Nike, because that makes sure that that person eats. That makes sure that that person has clothes. That's reparations. That is reparations. Anything they want to take, take it, because these businesses have insurance.
Amazing.
Wow, did you hear that? What was Saul Alinsky's tactic number 6? A good tactic is one your people enjoy. So this woman is out there as a quote-unquote official of the organized protest, saying it's okay to loot. You want some Nike product? Take it. You want some Gucci product? Take it. It's reparation. So in the mind of the masses, remember, people are stupid, selfish, and stubborn. So they're easily led and swayed. This woman is saying it's okay to loot. It's okay to take what's from others, what belongs to others. They have insurance. That's not the purpose of insurance, folks. There's no integrity in any of this. None, folks. And it's only what the end of Proverbs chapter 11, verse 3 says. It's called the perverseness of the transgressors. And what happens to their perversion? It's going to destroy them. So now what I'd like to do is change gears, okay? And see what the scriptures have to say about the importance of integrity. Because, folks, it is essential. If we're going to stand until Jesus returns, we have to maintain our integrity. So do you think we're doing that? Well, the scriptures are very clear that we need to. Proverbs 11, verse 3 reads, "The integrity of the upright shall guide them, but the perverseness of the transgressors shall destroy them." So it's very clear, very clear from that one scripture that we need to stand on our integrity. But in this sinful world, it's obvious to all of us, isn't it, that integrity in any one of us, even if we profess Jesus as Lord and Savior, even if we've surrendered our lives to Him, our integrity is less than perfect. Only Jesus had that perfect integrity. Yet when we abide in Jesus, when we live in Him and His ways, when we put our hands up and say, "Forsaking all, I trust Him," when we allow Jesus to live in us and through us, then and only then, folks, can we take that first step towards true integrity. Now, I'd just like to go through a few verses here that expand upon what this integrity actually is. Proverbs chapter 11, verse 3 again. "The integrity of the upright shall guide them, but the perverseness of the transgressors shall destroy them." So, folks, stay the course. This perversion we see will ultimately destroy them. Proverbs 28, verse 6. "Better is the poor that walketh in his uprightness than he that is perverse in his ways, though he too be rich." So that woman, that BLM lady, that's saying it's okay to loot, it's your reparation, she's going right against God's word, straight out of Proverbs 28, verse 6. It's better that the poor walk in uprightness. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 16. "Having a good conscience, that whereas they speak evil of you as of evildoers, they may be ashamed that falsely accuse your good conversation in Christ." So you can take about 3 or 4 of Saul Alinsky's methods there and stand on that scripture. And it's like dumping water on a smoldering fire. Proverbs 12:22, "Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but they that deal truly are his delight." 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 21, "Providing for honest things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men." So like St. Paul said, whatever's true, beautiful, good, lovely, dwell on those things, and the peace of God shall dwell in you. Proverbs chapter 4, verse 25 through 27. "Let thine eyes look right on. Let thine eyelids look straight before thee. Ponder the path of thy feet, and let all thy ways be established. Turn not to the right hand nor to the left. Remove thy foot from evil." And then Jesus says in Luke 6:31, "As ye would have that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise." You think that's what those looters are doing? You think they'd like to have their personal property destroyed and stolen? Isaiah 26, verse 7, "In the way of the just is uprightness. Thou, most upright, dost weigh the path of the just." And folks, there's a word out, and Pastor Todd, my pastor at our church here, Leechburg. He calls that true grit. That's why I put the title with the word integrity, the grit part in there in capital letters. Thank you, Pastor Todd. So I'd like to wrap this up with a few observations he made about the integrity of Joseph. You know, the man that was mentioned both in the book of Psalms and then in many chapters out of the book of Genesis. So we saw the entire life of Joseph from his childhood, when his dad gave him the technicolored dream coat, so to speak, all the way up to his time when he saved the family as the prime minister of Egypt. But anyway, Psalm 105, verses 16 through 22 allude to Joseph, where they call him, this is the guy who's been called out here in this section, I should say. Moreover, he called for a famine on the land. He brake the whole staff of bread. He sent a man before him, even Joseph, who was sold for a servant, whose feet they hurt with fetters. He was laid in iron. All the time his word came, the word of the Lord tried him. The king sent and loosed him, even the ruler of the people, and let him go free. He was made lord of his house. He was the right-hand man of Pharaoh, folks, ruler of all his substance, to bind his princes at his pleasure and to teach his senators wisdom. So God saw that this man, Joseph, had integrity, and he used him. That's the point. And likewise, if God sees that integrity in us, if he looks at us and sees the righteousness of Christ, the covering, the robe of righteousness from our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, God's going to use us. Did you know there's over 100 parallels between Joseph and Jesus, mostly found in the book of Genesis? And that's why Joseph had integrity. So what is this integrity exactly? Well, it's a quality of being honest and having strong moral principles. Like I said, as Pastor Todd said, it's true grit. And that's another way to say somebody has integrity. They have true grit. So let's look at what Joseph could have actually did. When he was young, he had that dream. And he could have fallen to pride, or he could have stood in godly confidence. And I think at that time he was a little foolish. It's told to us in Genesis chapter 37, verses 19 and 20. You know, he told his brothers and his parents about the dream he had, where they're all going to kneel down to him. And that upset his older brothers. And they said, behold, the dreamer cometh. Come now, therefore, and let us slay him and cast him into some pit. And we will say, some evil hath devoured him. We shall see what becomes of his dreams. So they were conspiring. Yes, it's a conspiracy, folks. Same thing that happens today with our politicians and our bankers and all the people in the deep state. So they wanted to kill him, but his one big brother defended him, said, no, let's not kill him. Let's just take some goat blood, smear it on his coat, take it back to dad. We'll throw him in the well, and we'll say he's dead. Well, what do you think is going to happen to him in the well? He's going to probably die. Yet along came some merchants, some slave traders, and they pulled him out of the well, and they sold him into slavery. So that's how he ended up in Egypt. Now, he could have had self-pity, or he could have maintained the heart of a servant. And that's shown to us in Genesis chapter 39, verses 1 through 4, where Joseph was brought down to Egypt, just like Jesus was as a child by his mom and dad. And Potiphar, the officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, brought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites. So he bought him and brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man. He was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. So he had complete authority in Potiphar's house. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, that's Potiphar's sight, and he served him. So Joseph served Potiphar, and he served him well, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had was put into his hand. So Potiphar trusted him with everything, and his wife saw that, and she wanted him. So she tried to seduce him, but he resisted it. Another evidence of his integrity was the fact that he could have fallen to temptation, but no, he resisted it by the grace of God. And that's told to us over in Genesis 39, verses 6 through 9. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he had, save the bread, which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well-favored. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." But he refused, and said unto his master's wife, "Behold, my master wrought not with it with me in this house, and hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I. Neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" So he stood upright, and he didn't succumb to this perversion. And look what it ended up doing. Ended up getting him thrown in jail. So now he had another choice, revenge or forgiveness. He could say, "Oh, my brothers got me into all this mess. If I ever see them again, I'm going to kill them. Oh, I didn't deserve this. I'm going to hunt that woman down, and I'm going to kill her." But no, he didn't do any of that. Listen to what he did. Genesis chapter 45, verses 4 through 8 and verse 11. And Joseph, this is after he's out. He interpreted a few dreams. The Pharaoh saw that he had this blessing upon him, and the Pharaoh appointed him prime minister of the land. So the clock's been wound ahead about six chapters. And Joseph said unto his brethren, who had come looking for food during this famine, "Come near to me, I pray you." And they came near, and he said, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom ye sold in Egypt. And therefore be not grieven, nor angry with yourselves, that ye sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, yet there are 5 years in which there shall neither be earing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity on the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance." You see, out of these brothers, one brother in particular, brother Judah, was to come Jesus. And then he continues in verse 8, "So now it was not you that sent me hither, but God. And he hath made me a father to Pharaoh, and a lord of all his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. And there I will nourish thee. For yet there are 5 years of famine, lest thou and thy household and all that thou hast come to poverty." So here's Joseph, a man of integrity. He sought forgiveness rather than revenge. These are all the elements that you and me can practice in the midst of all this craziness right now, folks. So God worked in the life of Joseph, and he's going to work in yours and mine too. Now, Joseph had breakthroughs, okay? And why did he have these breakthroughs? Because he maintained integrity, godly character. And then God saw this and said, "I'm going to use him as my instrument to save his family, bloodline of Judah, the foundation for Christianity." Isn't this powerful? So you and me, folks, you and me, we can be used by God if we stand and stand fast. And we have to remember, as we heard week after week after week, and I keep playing this to drive it in, as we heard in the words of Winston Churchill, if we never give in, if we never give up.
Never give in. Never give in. Never, never, never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in, except to convictions of honor and good sense. Never yield to force. Never yield to the apparently overwhelming might of the enemy.
Never, folks. Never give in. Stand fast. Stand on the righteousness of Christ. And remember, folks, as we heard from Jeremy Camp, that same power that rose Jesus from the grave lives in you and me. Folks, I love y'all, and I'll be back next week.
We're living in a very defining time in our generation, where fear is creeping in and the uncertainty of the unknown is everywhere.
I can see what is raging at my feet. I can feel the breath of those surrounding me. I can hear the sound of nations rising up. We will not be overtaken. We will not be overcome. I can walk.
There's an urgency like never before in my heart to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ. To show a world that looks like there is no hope, that in Jesus alone you will find that hope and peace. To stand up in the midst of adversity and tribulation, and to show the unconditional love of our Savior while not shying away from speaking the truth of God's Word.
The same power that rose Jesus from the grave. The same
change in our world, but many times we are left asking, how can I make a difference? What do I do next? The truth is, we can do nothing. In our own strength and our own power, we will fail. But Jesus himself said to the disciples, I leave with you my spirit. In Romans 8:11 it says, if the spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead dwells in you, will also give life to your mortal bodies through his spirit who dwells in you. Let's step out in his power. Let's proclaim the name of Jesus in boldness and love. And when the attacks come from all sides, walk in the understanding that greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world, because the enemy has been defeated and the victory is in Jesus.